So, depopulation, that's what it's all about, eh?
Depopulation.
We're being depopulated, and nobody knows it.
Am I dead without knowing?
Yeah, you've been depopulated already. There's a lag before you find out.
Before you find out you've been unpersoned.
Mm. Yep.
What do you have in mind?
What?
The Hello. Effects of COVID.
Everything.
Lockdowns.
Huh?
Supply shortages. Everything all combined.
COVID?
What are you...
talking about the latest news, Neil. Not 5 years ago.
No, but yeah. So this global energy shock is biting already.
No.
Excess mortality still high.
Huh? No, it's all depopulation. It's all a depopulation program, right? That's what everybody's saying.
That's the grand strategic purpose of it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to believe it hard, and then I went, hang on, the population.
Hang on, nobody's dying.
The population's growing and growing, at least by all official accounts. And, you know, certainly in the Western cities, there's not less people around than before. But then that's, in the West, it's mass, it's confused, the signal's confounded by immigration.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows at the same time that your peers are not having kids. Replacement rate is definitely below what it should be. So you would expect to see it. Smaller population numbers. Was that always a goal? I thought in the end that they might try, but they can't seem to. Like, the wars are never big enough.
Yeah, what's happening right now, Neil? Tell me right now. What's been happening the past few months?
Well, this...
what are people saying?
The Iran war.
Right. And what's going on with that?
The blockade and the blockade of the blockade.
Yeah. What happens if there's no more gas or oil?
Then you might actually get a serious famine.
Maybe, yeah.
For people outside the Golden Billion, for sure.
Yeah.
Those numbers are scary because that population explosion you see where it goes vertical like that in the 20th century, that comes online with oil-based fertilizers.
Yes, fertilizers.
And big ag.
Yeah, in general. Access to oil and gas in general, yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. That's what people are saying.
Yeah.
It's all over social media, like. All the people who are talking about it are all saying that's what's going on. Like, that's what the agenda is. Like.
The ultimate agenda, not Trump's agenda.
Yeah. Well, it depends. Yeah. So it depends on what way and what on your perspective, you know. Is it, people say that's the plan and stuff. And then do you say, well, is Trump planning that? And
no.
Probably not. But he's playing it. He's certainly the instrument through which that could happen. So maybe he secretly is planning it. He's just not telling anybody.
He's not even telling himself because of strategic ambiguity.
He doesn't even admit it to himself. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely possible. In a way that I haven't... We thought it might be with COVID, but... not so much the initial virus, but the follow-up. But the excess mortality was limited to, as you were explaining, dry tinder seasons.
Mm.
So it took larger numbers of older people in one or two goes.
Yeah, well,
didn't translate into...
Well, the official conspiracy theory is that it wasn't really... I mean, that was a byproduct in a certain sense, but that wasn't really the goal. There's a guy who's talking about it being like... an obedience.
Yes, control.
Obedience gene. Not an obedience gene, but like that it having an effect on the on people's brains and stuff, the spike protein basically, that it somehow encourages a kind of like a dumbing down, or some people say a change in personality, just making people more more compliant, more authoritarian, followery type, you know, less able to think more freely and stuff, you know. I mean, I can't remember his name right now. I'm going to have to look it up. Could be something along those lines. Anything's possible, I suppose. Conspiracy land, you know, you can make stuff up and
just roll
positive as a conspiracy. You know, you look at what's happening, right? And then you go, well, that's the essence of conspiracies, you know.
Yeah, people see a cluster of things. You just
look at what's happening and then assign agency to it. That's the essence the essence of the pushback against. So we're, you know, as long as conspiracy theories have been around, which is forever, but at least in the modern era, the pushback against conspiracy theories is that, you know, these people who believe in conspiracy theories are misinterpreting just random,
but that
randomness
was also,
for agency.
Well, randomness, but then also there's the saying of like, don't ascribe malevolence what can be described by stupidity.
Don't ascribe to malevolence what can be ascribed to stupidity.
Yeah. Yeah.
That never really flew, like, in a sense, because I wouldn't say it's stupidity. Stupidity doesn't make any sense because if somebody's, when you say stupidity, you mean like village idiots type thing, you know, I suppose, if you take it literally. And obviously, people in positions of power can't reasonably be said to be stupid, you know, unless you define stupid in a different way. But if you just say stupid, then none of them would be in power. They wouldn't know how to tie their shoelaces. They wouldn't know how to run a government. They wouldn't know how to keep themselves in power.
Well, Gavin Newsom just admitted somewhat like 2 weeks ago that he can't read because he's dyslexic.
Yeah, because it's dyslexia.
So, you know? I mean,
that's dyslexia.
That's a kind of stupid.
Yeah, but we're talking about everybody, right? The powers that be type thing, and calling them stupid it doesn't really get it, I don't think, because like I said, they wouldn't be able to keep it all together if they were just stupid. Like, you know, talking about a punch of knuckle dragger or idiots who can't, you know, can't add 2 + 2. Like, that doesn't really fly with the idea that people are ruling over us. So what does that make us then? You know, if you're like the low man on the totem pole and the top man on the totem pole, the chief of your village is a guy who goes, thinks 2 + 2 = 5. What does that make you? If you're, you know, being ruled by him,
right?
So it's kind of like a cell phone in a certain top to say that it's stupidity.
Yes, although the guy at the top of the totem pole has extra aggression and,
but that's not stupid then anymore.
Drive,
but you're going to be, that's not stupid.
Yeah,
drive towards what? Just to being stupid, or drive to
control,
and being smart enough, and being smart enough to do all that. It's not stupid anymore. I just use the word smart.
Yeah,
you can't say stupid.
On the depopulation as being the big reveal. You know, it's we all went through it. Everyone goes through it when they're waking up and they're trying to find out what's the ultimate agency or purpose behind the powers that be, at least here on 3D material Earth. It's where you arrive at, right? Even when we go into cycles of doom and hope and the man's going to make it and doom again, like I mentioned COVID because the subsequent lockdown and supply chain issues, we were like, they fucking, well, I was thinking anyway, they have broken the system. They think they can just turn it off and turn it on again. It'll be fine. It basically was fine. It did come back. But there was, I mean, there are some stats from the UN that, you know, sent another half a billion people into extreme poverty who had been lifted out of it. And so those people, yeah, they definitely had. If you were in those areas or brackets, you felt depopulation, you know?
Yeah.
But overall, as a complex system with billions of people on the planet, it is remarkably adaptable. So even if you posit in your mind and you think you've nailed the agency, what the system is driving towards, maybe depopulation, they seem to fail. They seem to suck at it because it's a complex system that adapts.
Mm-hmm.
People are unbelievably adaptable
and resilient.
So I'm holding out while I'm like looking at the lag, as I mentioned last week, which is showing up crazy numbers. We are facing a lag, even if things are fine tomorrow and the home straight reopens as was before. There's a serious wave coming behind that anyway.
I think
are adaptable, including systems, including bilateral cooperation between countries. we could actually absorb it. I'm open to it. I'm not being hopey. That isn't copium.
Well, there's a lag, but there's a lag. Yeah, because generally speaking, we're eating last year's food, right? So it'll be next year.
Yeah.
So next year would be the problem. But that's only if it continues, you know, if the whole high prices of oil and gas, the restriction on oil and gas continues, Strait of Hormuz business with Iran continues, then into next year, then you would have a compounded lag in a certain sense, because then you'd have a problem last year from this year. And if it continues this year, then you'd have a problem next year on top of, you know, it just builds up, accumulates, right? You've got certain X number of months this year that are going to transfer next year. That continues all the rest of this year. Then you've got this year. Next year, you've got the problems that were created by this year. And then next year, if those problems continue, then they compound with each other, because the problems continue into next year. You've got double problems, basically. And there's other factors could intervene as well, I suppose. Other issues could... We don't know. But the question is depopulation a bad thing? Is that using that as a bad word? Is that a bad word? Is that in your list of bad words? Depopulation? Is that something you say under your breath? Like, what about China's one child policy that they're on for a while? Is that depopulation?
Yes.
That was depopulation?
Yeah.
And that was bad?
Yes.
Was
yes,
maybe
it was bad,
right?
It was bad for China.
they do seem to regret it.
Yeah, and what if the population is over? What if the world is overpopulated?
That's a hard one to say,
huh? But what if it is? What if realistically, if you run the number, you're able to run the numbers and all that kind of stuff, and you realize that there isn't enough kind of carrying capacity for the whole world in terms of just. Of course, you can bring in other factors like mismanagement and all the kind of stuff and greed, blah, blah. But given those as mainstays of life on this planet, you know, you're not trying to reinvent the wheel here. You're not being too idealistic, you know. Mm-hmm. What if simply the way the world works and has worked for quite a long time with powerful people, you know, power corrupting and et cetera. Yeah. That's just the way things are. We've reached a point where the kind of the entrenching of that kind of corruption in positions of power has led to a situation where there really isn't the carrying capacity in terms of food production primarily, and the climate and all that kind of stuff has led you to believe that we are kind of overpopulated. What do you do then? Do you still back Elon Musk and say have as many babies as possible?
It depends on who's
and send them all to Mars.
Who's saying it?
Huh? Well, whoever. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who says it. Like, if you've run the numbers.
Well, the people who ran the numbers in the 70s wrote Limits to Growth, and they were the British aristocracy, the Bilderberg Group, and the Northeast establishment in the United States. Hmm. And they then acted. We're living in the fruits of their actions, on the shadows of. So they definitely see it as that, and they believe it's objectively the case. Hmm. But they're making real a scarcity issue. That they're convinced must be done too.
They're making real a scarcity issue.
Yeah. Well, they're absolutely convinced there's not enough for everyone, so.
But what if there isn't?
What if there isn't? Okay, but then you the same people saying that are trying to stuff as many millions of migrants into the United States and Europe as they possibly can.
Hmm.
What are they doing? Like, there's not enough. Get them in. What? So there's obviously...
Well, they're just transferring some people from one country to another. That's not really depopulation. Like, you know what I mean? That's not repopulation. That's just moving people from one area to the next. You know?
Yeah, it's hard one. That's
it's like, don't make me agree with like Henry Kissinger.
Yeah, well, you got to get past that. Do you know what I mean? If you want to be objective about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not saying you should agree with Henry Kissinger or anybody else like that. I'm just saying you need to think about it. People should think about it.
Well, okay. Yeah. So there's the theoretical problem of like depopulation as an idea and the carrying capacity of the world as like potentialities and possibilities. And like, sure, there's probably some way of tooling the system to where the world can support more than currently exists today. We don't know what the extent of that number is, but in order to get there, you would have to have a completely different system.
Yeah.
Which we don't have.
Right.
Okay.
So, again, that then puts you in the position of being idealistic, let's say, and lamenting the state of, ultimately you get back to human nature or the aberrant parts of human nature, let's say, the deviant types of humans, let's say, you know what I mean? But that is a part of the world we live in, right? So you'll ultimately be saying, well, let's get rid of all the psychos and then the world will be perfect and we can live.
Now, that's what I can get behind.
We can have as many people as possible.
A targeted depopulation.
Yeah.
I can get behind.
No, but I mean, yeah.
But scattershot, well, that would be fair, I suppose. It's hit and miss. It's 50-50. Just chance. But in practice, what you're talking about is the shithead surviving and the people who generally haven't done so much wrong, except exist, getting the brunt of the depopulating.
Yeah.
That's why I could never go, we should
in the context of what we're talking, in the context of which we're talking about this, it's like, obviously we're talking about Trump and Iran and, you know, the kind of oil, gas shortage, whatever, brewing, impending, or high prices initially, shortage of fertilizer, all sorts of other things that are produced as byproducts of all that need oil and gas to produce, and having a shortage of those in the world, and, you know, upending the kind of the fundamentals of what makes the world tick, you know, there being a constriction on that, you know. Is Trump doing that for that reason?
No.
What's his reason?
The new American century,
right,
ensuring the petrodollar. And Iran kind of probably in his mind confirmed, I'm doing this for the right reasons, when on day 4 or 5, they waved the red rag of, okay, here's an idea. Y'all pay a toll here and you pay in yuan. It was literally like, Trump is like, when he heard that, he went, this is why we're doing it. Because petrodollar goes, the United States is screwed. And the world's not worth having without a Western-led system.
Right.
And of course, we happen to be the best at it. So,
well, it's not that it's not worth having. It's that it'd be very bad for us, in Trump, America in particular, or the West, quote-unquote, which is breaking apart, I suppose. But America, that's Trump's perspective, is that multipolar world is bad for America, which is what we've been saying for quite a long time on the show over and over again. That's a fundamental reason why Trump's fundamental, not just Trump's, and it goes beyond Trump, it goes back before Trump, obviously. We can talk about that, but his thing is that what he's got on board with is that a multipolar world is very bad for America, economically, power-wise, all that kind of stuff, and that's what all this business with Iran is about.
It's all of a piece. We've already said this. No one can miss the fact that this year began with Venezuela, Maduro, quickly segues Greenland. People were all like, what the fuck? Then quickly segues Iran. Yeah.
He was signaling it all along. He tweeted this, I think, just, or not on his tweet, or if it's on his Truth Social, that nobody, that nobody reads. I will soon be reviewing the plan that Iran has just sent to us, but can't imagine that it would be acceptable in that they have not yet paid a big enough price for what they have done to humanity and the world over the past 7 years. 47 years. Thank you for your attention to this matter. Whatever. They haven't yet paid a big enough price for what they have done to humanity and the world. So, Adam, how old are you?
I am 37.
So for 80% of your life, have you been aware that Iran has been doing, I don't know, he doesn't specify, but are you aware that Iran has needed for most of your life? That it has been avoiding or has been shirking, paying the big enough price for what it has done to humanity and the world. Humanity and the world. humanity lives in the world and the world is humanity. So mm-hmm. he was just being explicit there, humanity and the world. Don't know what the difference is there. Look what you've done to humanity. Look what you've done to the world. Is that a bit redundant? Don't know, but it's Trump. Anyway, are you aware that Iran has been a bane, a pestilence, a boil on the world for all of your life? Can you enumerate for me all the things that Iran has done to the world and humanity over the past 47 years or 37?
I would like to state for the record that I can neither confirm nor deny
that Iran has done anything.
The accuracy of that statement.
Right.
And I will disavow all knowledge, any and all knowledge.
So, yeah.
It does need to be explained.
Huh?
Go for it. Please do.
Explain what?
What he has in mind.
Well, he doesn't have anything in mind. He's making it up.
Yeah. But he said it more than once.
Huh?
He said something. He's been...
Well, but that's just... That's all to made up. Like, the only thing that makes it... Like, they killed a bunch of our soldiers.
Killed a bunch of our soldiers. Iraq. Number one sponsor of world terror.
World terror, i.e. in the Middle East.
Yeah.
I.e. Iraq, i.e. when America invaded Iraq, illegally invaded Iraq, which is right on Iran's doorstep, and tried to take over that whole region. And, you know, the Iraq war was as much about Iran as it was about Iraq. So Iran had the temerity to actually help the Iraqis, directly and indirectly, to try and push back against the illegal American invasion of Iraq. And for that...
But that's not 47 years.
Huh?
It's only half of that time.
Well, hostages. They did the hostage thing, which was, I mean, did you realize the effect on humanity of that hostage-taking situation back in the day? Humanity was aghast. Go on.
I think it's that the Islamic Revolution in 1979, not at first, in fact, it was quite commie-lefty, but quickly became enshrined in it resistance to the empire, and they clarified the American/Zionist regime, which they thereafter referred to in all their official communiques. That, I think, is what ties it all together in a wrap to this entire regime. It's their principle, their stated.
So saying no to
the country's actual.
So saying no to America
regime
could be summed up with, look what you have done to humanity and the world.
Yes.
Yes.
Saying no to America.
Yes.
You know, in the way they've said no.
So it's a bit
seriously saying no.
It's a bit self absorbed, no?
This is coming from the guy who has new passports coming out with his face on it.
Right.
His face over, like, behind his beautiful mugshot.
Coif.
Beautifully coiffed mugshot was it the U.S. Constitution, I think, for all of U.S. passports for a year. So when you say, isn't that a little self-absorbed, you're like, well...
We're talking about Mr. Self-absorbed.
This is who we're talking about.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So Iran's a bad guy. Nuclear... I mean, you have to understand. I mean, I thought people had got a clue. 22 years ago, at least 11 million Europeans... And some Americans as well, and a few other people around the world, all protested the Iraq invasion in March, just before it happened in March 2003. 11 million people on the streets in Europe, and they're all holding postcards or placards saying "No war for oil." This is despite the fact that they were being told repeatedly that this war was to protect them from Iraq being able to, in 45 minutes or less, launch some kind of a dirty bomb and blow up the House of Parliament, or something like that. So they're told that over and over again, but many of them said, that's bullshit, this is a war for oil. All those people, and I assume more that weren't out in the streets, were aware back then that there's a narrative around these wars. And this is 22 years ago. We've had a lot of narratives about US, NATO, whatever, mainly US invasions or attacks on other countries since then. Narrative, 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 and I suppose everybody was able to just plug that in and go, yeah, that's another narrative. We know that these ultimately are wars for oil, and ultimately what a war for oil is a war for control and power, global domination, right? Energy resources, you hold the control of the spigot of global energy. It means you can control other countries and maintain your position of power. So nothing changed. This is what obviously the Iran this business with Iran is about as well. Like you said, it was you can't dissociate it from Venezuela under Trump. And it's interesting, Trump is like giving everybody, Trump is the big billboard in front of everybody's face. Anybody who didn't get the message that this is all just for, he has the balls to do that. Like, he'll come out and say about Venezuela, yeah, we're getting the oil. We're doing it for the oil.
We're kind of like pirates.
And then it was narco trafficante, save Americans, fentanyl, evil Maduro. He's the drug kingpin. He's killing Americans, killing Americans, killing Americans. It's for the oil. So he said that repeatedly at the time. And then, I mean, has he said it this time? Hasn't been too explicit. He's focused more on can't have a nuclear weapon because they'll use it and blow everybody up or something, yada, 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 which we've talked about before is obviously bullshit. So we're just being, you know, deluged with large quantities of bullshit and have been for such a long time. You know, he said... just the past few days, whatever, again, a moment of honesty, I suppose, which, you know, you have to be grateful to Trump for. Makes it a bit easier for the average person. Here he is somewhere, I don't know where he was talking here, but recently he said this.
He's in Florida.
Oh, yeah, he was just in Florida, where everybody loves him. Go ahead.
Of everything else, we then land on top of it, and we took over the ship, we took over the cargo, took over the oil. A very profitable business. Who would have thought we were doing that? We're like pirates. We're sort of like pirates.
Yeah, everybody's happy that we're pirates. Yo-ho-ho and a bottle of rum. We're like pirates. Yay.
And a barrel of oil.
And a barrel of oil.
And
everybody's happy there. Everybody's like, yay.
For context, he was talking about the blockade against the Iranians.
Boarding Iranian tankers, yeah.
Yes, so we've moved away, obviously, from freedom of navigation to maritime theft. It's funny because I saw that after reading an in-depth article, which I thought did a really good job of connecting the dots of these three things: Venezuela, Greenland, Iran, but also Trump's deciphering, where possible, so some of Trump's odd statements in between. So this is the article written by Richard Medhurst. I think he's nailed it. I think he's got a very good structural theory of what the US is playing at here. What's consistent in all of them? It's way too long for us to go through completely. Now, there's it on his Substack, how the U.S. pulled off an armed robbery of the world's energy supply and created the petrogas dollar. So the petrogas dollar, he's just changing it from petrodollar because he said what we're used to since 1971 is a de facto pegging of the U.S. dollar to Gulf oil exports because they get recycled back into the U.S. economy. Now it's actually the oil. He thinks that where they want to lead this is for the United States, thanks to its heist in Venezuela, ideally with Canadian oil also in hand, and the massive uptick in American exports of LNG, that the new petro LNG type petro gas dollar is backed by American oil and gas exports, not being obviously the sole source of it. But it's a good explainer because if you think about on the gas side of things, the the Ukraine war made the United States the number one exporter of LNG.
Mm-hmm.
It pipped Qatar for the first time
mm-hmm.
in 20 years. Qatar is now taking a hit and a half because of that strike and counter-strike. Remember that strange little episode?
Mm-hmm.
It was like April 9th or something.
Mm-hmm. And the Americans said the Israelis did it without their permission, mm-hmm. but that's probably bullshit.
And that
has since caused Qatar to declare force majeure and basically cut off all LNG exports. Yeah. You know? So basically that was America / Israel, but same thing. Basically that was them taking out Qatari LNG. But a lot of that was going to China as well. So it's a two-track two-track strategy, basically. Yeah. I mean, if you take out anybody, a competitor, you're taking out your competitor's supply. That not necessarily a competitor, but almost like your friend's supply that up until now was fine. But instead, you're taking it out in order to reduce your actual competitor, China's access to as much as you can to oil and or gas, and making you the person who then would, in theory, supply it and giving you leverage over them. You basically, it's like China's America's geopolitical competitor on the world stage, and it would like to have leverage over China, basically. Like, it doesn't want China to have free access to as much oil and gas as it wants in the open market from whoever it wants. It would like to cut as many people off as possible in order to make China more reliant on America directly or through America on America's allies. You know?
Indeed. So the article contains some data that I've actually been looking for, which is, has there been any bite or actual effect on China's imports? China has to import 3/4 of its energy needs from abroad. Mm-hmm. Only half of its gas, interestingly, China keeps discovering. Last week, they announced the discovery of 250 new major and medium gas fields in their big desert. Xinjiang desert. Anyway, on oil, though, it's 3/4. They need it from abroad. And so there is some data. China's imports of gas are taking a hit. So there's recent month-by-month data, and he includes that in the article. So that was interesting to see. It ties together so many other things. When this began, we all went, OMG, what is he doing? Every American president knows not to do this. Why? Because of the upcoming midterms and the hit at the gas pump and yada, 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 mm-hmm. domestically. That's no longer the case. Ordinarily, the dollar would have taken a big hit. The dollar is as strong as ever. Mm-hmm. Part of what's going on here is that the US is more than ever a safe haven. So, it's bizarre. I don't know if the Qataris are in on a conspiracy here, but it doesn't look good. Literally, on like the same day that they took this major, that the Ras Laffan, the world's largest LNG refinery, was hit, they did a proud ribbon cutting ceremony to open over in Texas, mm-hmm. a new joint Chevron Qatar Energy terminal, mm-hmm. of which Qatar's is the 70% stake.
Mm-hmm. That's onshoring.
So we're bringing home American industry. You're bringing over your allies. You're effectively what
he's make us a hub. Make us the global hub for to the greatest extent possible. But like, it's a very delicate balancing act because obviously, you know, America's hooked into the global economic system. Obviously, like everybody else is, and I mean, you can only engage in that kind of. That was kind of a game that they're playing to a certain extent, because you can't strangle, even if you could do it, you can't strangle China's economy to the point where you're going to take a major hit as well, you know.
It's just at the margin. For China, it's just like, you know, yeah, hit it at marginally. It's not too,
you know, enough to make them more reliant. Like, you know, yeah. It has to be, you know, but that could spiral out of control in a certain sense. You know, it's a dangerous game, you know.
That has happened. Demand for US LNG from China has increased in recent weeks.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And Trump's happy about that. That's what he wanted, right? Yeah. More money he's going to make. That's MAGA. This is all MAGA, you know. This is why Tucker Carlson doesn't get it. This is MAGA. Tucker Carlson is low IQ. Mm-hmm. A low IQ loser.
Yep.
And he doesn't get it. He doesn't understand this, that Trump, what Trump is doing is MAGA. And this is the central thing. I never, like, in all the discussions of, like, from people like Tucker Carlson, et cetera, about, we're very focused on why this is happening and what Trump is doing and why he's doing what he's doing and how it's not good for America. I never heard him once, or any of his guests, anybody who actually talked to him, go into the real reasons. An attempt to rationally explain why Trump is doing what he's doing.
Yeah.
Instead of going immediately to, he didn't put his hand in the Bible, therefore he's the Antichrist, and that's why I don't like him, and that's why he's doing what he's doing, because he's the Antichrist. It's like, well, surely before you go there, you could try and flesh out some rational reasons, because there's nearly always, even if they're not rational from the average person's point of view, from great power politics, there's nearly always a rational reason from the point of view of that great power politics, which has always been cutthroat and dog eat dog, and, you know,
That Antichrist one aside, most of his and others, Jeffrey Sachs included, on the left, so to speak, of the spectrum, mm-hmm. of the dissenting analyses in the West, all are defaulting to is Israel. It's for Israel. It's Netanyahu controls Trump.
Well, it is,
which is part of it, but
it is for Israel.
They're missing this other big part of the picture.
It's for Israel in the same way that, you know, if you have a mafia family, you know, you're all in the same business. You're in the same mafia business where you're extorting money from people, and you know, so the original families in one house, and then they have like an uncle and a brother or whatever in other houses. Well, they all protect each other. It's for them all. They're all in the same business, you know. Mm-hmm. Israel is little brother, big brother, whatever you want to call it. It's family member. Keep it in the family to America. So, of course, it's for Israel, but it's for America as well, by definition. Because, like we keep saying, Israel is America's, always has been America's unsinkable aircraft carrier in the Middle East. Very important region, very important. It's a garrison.
I know,
Israel is a is America's garrison. So to say that this is for Israel is like, and go, oh my God, how are they doing? Why are they doing this for Israel? This isn't MAGA. Israel is. I used the phrase quad, the term, the analogy Quattu. You know, I don't know, Quattu was good. You told me he was a good guy, did you? Was that Bo told me?
No, I think it was Bo
told me it was Quattu was good. But whatever, he's evil Quattu, right? Basically, it's a symbiotic extension of America. So I get really tired of people thinking, especially Americans who don't seem to be able to grasp this, which is like, why are they doing this for Israel? You just don't understand what Israel is and what it means to America and what it has always meant to America. It's like they grafted a new limb onto the American body, politic and economic. And it's been that way for 50 years, 60 years, 70 years. So it's basically an extension of America. And then people now just wake up and go, why are we supporting Israel? Because it's your right arm?
Yeah.
Why are we supporting our right arm?
But they've convinced themselves that it's gotten inside our head, and if we just had an exorcism, we'd be fine. But the whole body is, and Trump's value as the strategic discombobulator, because he himself is the problem here. He's distorting the signal. There is a strong, I think Medhurst has managed to tease out a very solid signal in all this. Like, look what's happened now. De facto, there are currently three massive ocean blockades, at least region-wise, they're massive. The US doesn't have enough ships to really police them as they're projecting they do. But still, officially, there are three blockades. One's in the Caribbean. One is up around Greenland, the Arctic operation that was launched as a result of Trump talking up about invading Greenland. It spurred the Europeans to send up a bunch of material and ships, but it turns out it wasn't about getting Greenland, because if you listen to what Trump was saying in between all that, it's those Russians and Chinese, they're all over the place there. And you had people in NATO and Brussels going, sir, there isn't a single Russian sub, Chinese vessel, what are you but they assumed he was talking about Navy. Mm-hmm. He was talking about their shadow fleet. He was talking about tankers. That's what he meant. And since then, there have been two raids. One of them, they chased a Russian ship all the way from Venezuela. Didn't let it get into Venezuela and chased it up and boarded it off Scotland. They made a big show of doing that. That was a few months ago. That's part of the operation in the Arctic. Operation Sentry, I think it's called. Ongoing. Medhurst also showed that part of the reason these aircraft carriers are going around all over the place is because they're rushing. The USS Ford was involved in the Arctic operation, then the Caribbean, and now it's in Iran, mm-hmm. where it's the blockade on the Indian Ocean outside
one
the Strait of
Hormuz. One of them's leaving again. Is it George W. Bush is going left again?
Because they're hopping around trying to do multiple blockades at once. Mm-hmm. It's all of a piece.
And that's what aircraft carriers are for. Basically, it's America. But, it's America World Police, basically. The defining characteristic of America as the world police was this aircraft carrier.
Medhurst is saying we need to get away from, and that the Americans themselves are acknowledging getting away from, that is for land wars.
No, technology wars.
He makes the case that we know objectively they've been humiliated on land in the Middle East. CNN finally admitted 6 weeks later in a report this week that the damage to US bases is gargantuan all across the Gulf. But they had a fallback, which is, well, fine then, we'll police the waters. Now, it's hard to get a read. Mm-hmm. The Wall Street Journal will tell you the blockade of the blockade is going awesomely, and Iran is feeling the pressure. Literally, they're having to pressure in and close the oil wells. They've run out of storage capacity, and any day now it's going to explode. That could be propaganda, because the Iranians are saying, no, it's fine. Mm-hmm. Larry Johnson has done some numbers on the math. Even if US had as many ships as they do have, it's such a large area. They don't go anywhere near the Iranian coast, and so its tankers are just hugging the coast and getting in and out. And something like at least 80-85% can get in and out. Anyway, but still, on paper, there is a blockade, a naval blockade. And the fallback thing is people are assuming, oh my God, oil crisis, terrible for US domestic politics. This has to end soon. The actual sound fundamentals for the US economy, not least the dollar, gold is actually going down, down, down. They're not behaving as you would have expected, because they don't mind losing the Iran war so long, because their focus now is the oceans. And when I saw that, we're kind of like pirates now. That's where they're going with this. Yeah.
What do you mean by losing the Iran war? How do you define that?
The Iranian counterstrikes on their bases and not going back in there. Mm-hmm. They won't be returning.
But
unless they've really regime changed Iran, they're on it. Because Iran can build back capacity and hit them again.
But they can periodically, yeah. They can periodically just go and keep Iran down. Like periodically,
yes.
Strike Iran.
From afar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's their plan. And they don't care about losing.
Yeah.
X number of bases are, you know, being pushed out to some extent from the Middle East, because, like I said, they always have.
They always have
the American bases. They don't care about.
They always have Israel.
Exactly.
They always have Israel. There are other details that make more sense. We glossed over it last week. He fired Dan Phelan, the Navy Secretary, mm-hmm. and we all assumed mm-hmm. could be kind of just. Oh, mentioned it, but we all assumed it's because the war wasn't going well. That's not why he fired him. The Trump administration fired its top naval official Wednesday, that's the week before last, in a move unrelated to the ongoing naval blockade, but instead over an internal dispute about shipbuilding.
He wants to build a Trump class aircraft here, is that it?
No. He does. No, the Guardian.
He called that
again, it's layers of assumption. The Guardian, in this write-up I'm reading from, assumed that's because of a spat about there's a Trump class, destroyer class, of which Trump and the Golden Fleet or something,
yeah.
of which two are to be built.
The Golden Trump class.
Again, they misread it. No. Medhurst explained, and he pulled up a document. There are actually two iterations of it now. One was published in February this year. It's called the Maritime Action Plan. The shipbuilding is about building tankers. Mm-hmm. But they're actually at least partly funded by the US government. So in other words, it's like they're not quite Navy, military. They're not quite private. They're American LNG tankers. This plan explains that they want to dominate the actual ownership and building mm-hmm. of tankers, not just for LNG, but for super class VLCC for oil transshipment as well. He's making the case that they're reverting to becoming a naval power. That sounds like, hang on, that's going backwards. Surely it was air that dominated. It was, but. In a way, they want to go back to being a naval power. They want to dominate all these sanctions, not just against Iran, but against Russia, is to do with capturing the shipping market for energy. Because mm-hmm. everyone is still reliant on it. It blew my mind that like the Chinese and the Russians are building pipelines, but they can't build them fast enough. Mm-hmm. It's still 3/4 of the world's energy is moved by ships, at least. In some relationships, in some areas, it's up as high as 90%.
But that's the way it always will be, because ships can be moved out of the way, whereas pipelines can't.
Pipelines can't.
Because you always have an eye on war.
China loves getting Urals crude. So that's obviously the Urals, the end of European Russia, thousands of miles away from where it's needed on the East Coast, the ports of Beijing and Eastern China. That has to be shipped to the Baltic. Also through Murmansk, thus through the Arctic. Mm-hmm. They don't really have, they want to, but it depends seasonally. It depends on icebreakers. Ideally, they'd like to go around the Arctic and down around Russia's far east past Japan. Mm-hmm. But practically, it goes out the Baltic, which is because of the Ukraine war, Russia is heavily.
The focus on the Arctic again is just all part of the same game plan, because there's a lot of untapped oil and gas resources in the Arctic, and it depends who technically owns them or gets there, and who's off whose coast it is and all that kind of stuff. And again, that's what Trump's whole focus on the Arctic and all that kind of stuff is also about, development of resources there, and someone beating America to the punch basically, and then sidelining or thwarting his attempt to become to make America the primary oil and gas broker in the world. Yeah.
Some of his crazier tweets that we kind of went, what the hell, in the middle of full on Iran war in March, concerned specific elements in their plan. So one of them was, come to the US to build your ships and you won't get sanctioned or taxed or something. It's part of like you either. The first thing is anything shipped to or from the US must be an American ship. That's the ultimate goal. Mm-hmm. Failing that, have your ship built here. Failing that, either way, they're going to extract something. And it could be any transshipment around the world. The US will get something out of. There will be, basically, as Meher said in the article, if they don't. It's no longer the focus now is, and we've seen it in practice. This is what's been growing and growing for all the different reasons, but ultimately they have the same aim. Mm-hmm. It's not enough just to stop an alternative to the petrodollar forming. You have to stop or intervene in and gain leverage over the trade between two other parties. Mm-hmm. And by hook or crook, they're going to do whatever it takes. And it's a good explainer, because we began thinking with Trump too that it looked like the focus was sort of rein in the horns of the American empire and geographically keep it to the Western Hemisphere, so North and South America, right? And, well, okay, sort of like a tacit acceptance of a multipolar world, mm-hmm. but it's not. It's more vicious than that. It's like... We have to, on the way to retreating, we have to fight it.
I don't think we ever said that tacitly accepting a multipolar world was fight for, at least I said, really fighting for a multipolar world, fighting against within a multipolar world for every inch, basically. Yeah. You know what I mean? But accepting, i.e., we're not going to try and destroy countries in order to rule the whole world, because obviously that'd be crazy. And maybe, I don't know if there's any crazies like that, and there may have been crazies like that under Bush and all that kind of stuff. But Trump at least was a bit more rational.
They know they can't just destroy China conventionally.
They're like, look, there's a multipolar world emerging, and if we just sit back and do nothing, it's going to be very bad for America. So we have to use the power and influence that America has to project it into the place that we need to, within reason, without starting a nuclear war and without destroying global economies, which would obviously negatively affect America as much as anybody else. But doing what we need to do in order to win as bigly as possible. And that's what we're doing, and that's more or less what we said. His approach was. So it was going to be a withdrawal of America in terms of its overt maintenance of empire on the ground. Empire, like he's talking recently about pulling troops out of Germany, 5,000. But he said just yesterday or something, it's going to be way more than 5,000 troops.
Yeah,
And dissing NATO and basically trying to rubbish NATO. So that whole America as world police is what we were saying he was backing away from in terms of maintenance. And that's why they gutted, what do you call it, the USAID and all that kind of stuff. And
no more nation building.
Doge and all that kind of stuff. Maybe yeah, he backed away from
maybe
that.
Maybe even the bases. Massive drawdown.
Yeah, you don't need it if you don't need them. If they're not structured, if they're not strategically important, and if you can, if with your plan you can enforce your or get your way, or get with this new plan you can achieve your aims without having or having to pay for boots on the ground.
Yeah,
and it's consistent with them moving away from nation building, because obviously having a significant military base in foreign countries is part of nation building.
Yeah.
So you draw down that as much as possible, and focus on.
Focus
being parts of the global
water. It's much more structurally. When you have to really like sit with that for a while. We've noted it before. 90% of all things are shipped through six key choke points.
Mm-hmm.
But the key, I mean, the thing on which all the other 90% are built and shipped, is 75% of all energy on the water. And there's no amount of new pipelines that can ever. It's almost like the fundamental geographic reality, the baseline on which everything else is built. So they've been smart and they've gone, okay, no more land-based occupation, nation-building, bloody expensive, we're sitting ducks. Look, it's almost like if you imagine there were two factions in the Pentagon, and there were a bunch of them, didn't they quit or they were fired on the eve of this? Something, there was this bat, the Pentagon. It happened. And one side said, look, I told you that would happen. But the one that said, I told you it would happen, was proven right. But they may be the ones already thinking strategically and going, exactly, that's why we're drawing down. Well, we're not going back in. What's the point? We'd just be sitting ducks again. Given the technological developments of even a mid-power country like Iran and what they can do with bloody propeller lawnmower Shahed drones.
It's just pulling the curtain back on how the world really works in a certain sense, you know, and but definitely under Trump, everything is, the whole strategy is changing. And he's being accused of ruining America's reputation around the world, you know, and making enemies and all that kind of stuff. And Trump's like, look, I'm just playing the whole game here more realistically in terms of how it actually is. The only reason America's reputation around the world was enforced or created or upheld by all sorts of, like you said, nation building and behind the scenes diplomacy, but largely nation building. That's why they went after, they gutted, that's what Doge was for, right? USAID and all that kind of stuff, you know, because that was part of the plan, to no longer service the world as the empire servicing its client states all around. Well, screw that, like, you know, none of these people. They're not our friends, really. They're only doing what we're doing because A, they're maybe a bit afraid of us, or B, or maybe it should be reversed. They're benefiting massively from us, from our largesse, from our economic largesse in nation building. So we're just not doing that anymore. And in order to turn all that around and change the whole script in terms of how America operates in the world, of course you're going to have to destroy America's reputation that it had created over the past 80 years. Everybody's going to be aghast. What's happening? Well, it's like, stop pretending that you're so aghast. That
I know.
This is the way the world has always worked. It was just covered up with a veneer of diplomacy and freedom and democracy and all that kind of stuff.
I know.
And to his credit, Trump's like, that's just cynical. That's just crass bullshit. Like it's almost like he's, part of his personality is that he just can't tolerate that kind of fakery, that kind of bullshit, you know. Yes, freedom, democracy, and we're doing it for the love of the freedom of the free peoples of the world, and we just want to everybody. No, you don't.
Bullshit.
It's horseshit.
The single act that made the US number one in LNG exporter was Nord Stream under Biden.
Yeah.
Voila.
Yeah, but that puts it back to 2014. So this is well before Trump. You know what I mean? The plan to invade Ukraine, which you'd have to put back before then, because that was the coup in 2014 to overthrow Ukraine. And they knew very well that Russia would not tolerate that and would probably invade Ukraine, which is what they wanted, because they wanted to embroil Russia in a war.
And to be able to sanction its energy exports.
And sanction it and blow up Nord Stream, because, you know, get to justify the destruction of Nord Stream, because America wanted to supply the gas to Europe that was formerly was to land being supplied by Russia. And they also wanted to have Russia in that kind of a war status, war conditions. So with Ukraine being the glove, the American hand in the Ukrainian glove, to the extent that they're willing, or to as far as they're willing to go, to attack Russia, attack Russian oil refineries, pretending it's Ukraine or claiming it's Ukraine, when in fact it's obviously a Western, always has been since it began, a Western war, a US primarily war against Russia, primarily for, ultimately for, control over global oil and energy reserves.
Medhurst articulates a maximalist, maybe down the road strategic goal. This is probably too far, but I'll say it anyway. The energy spigot of the world becomes the USA.
Yeah.
That would, you can think about, that would be the ultimate. If you had the petrodollar, why rely on it? What happens over there in the Middle East?
Yeah.
If it was here, you really would be looking at a new American century.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because if they pull that off,
they'll probably wreck it though.
Right, in the process.
Probably in the process, things will. I mean, so people kind of understand, if you throw up that article, Scotty, and title of it is Russia, Syria, and the Anglo-American Existential Gas War in the Middle East, 2015, written by me. Scroll down to the picture of Putin from the 80s with his 80s glasses on. It goes into all sorts of different stuff, historical stuff about the petrodollar and all that. Pretty long. There you go. There's Putin in his creepy tinted glasses. If you just go
the button under the paragraph his desk that sets above, off the missile.
That one above there. So it just says there, the US president of the Middle East since 9/11, involving the invasion and occupation of Iraq and Afghanistan, the bombing of Pakistan, the overthrow of Gaddafi, and the manufactured civil war in Syria, have all had one goal. And it's the same goal as always, thwarting Russian, to a lesser extent Chinese and Iranian economic expansion beyond their borders and protecting the hegemonic status of the petrodollar. In a nutshell, if Russia, China, and Iran are permitted to engage in free trade with each other and other countries to the south and west, the days of the petrodollar and therefore Anglo-America are numbered. And then paragraph below, closely linked to Anglo-America's desperate attempts to protect the petrodollar is its historical drive to not only block closer economic ties between Russia and Europe, but also to roll back those that already exist. The US in particular sees European dependency on Russian gas and any major oil producer not owned or readily influenced by the US as a major threat to continued European commitment to Anglo-American values of keeping America on top. And that was 7 years before they blew up Nord Stream. So, you know, you forgive me if I lament the fact that we're having to repeat this when I said it all 10 years ago, 11 years ago, and said it more than one, just once. Wrote a bunch of articles detailing pretty much all this. Of course, there's things that have come to pass that you know, were nuanced or whatever, etc., in terms of how the whole process has evolved. But that was the story back in 2015. It was fairly easily discernible. And it hasn't really changed. It's just followed more or less the same course. Of course, like I said, there's been twists and turns in terms of how it's manifesting, but it's pretty much on course for the same. The general outline there is being followed.
Yeah. But in the intervening years, though, you did feel at times that BRICS and One Belt, One Road are on the up. But the U.S. has adapted, like they say, like the famous quote attributed to Karl Rove, you know, we create a new reality. And I think they can adapt.
I never thought BRICS was going to, I mean, ultimately down, you know, eventually. I think as far as anybody would have. Could go at that point was that this BRICS was a manifestation of the kind of, you know, the natural order of a multipolar world emerging and America not being happy with it, and the stuff I was talking about in that article about gas wars and starting wars, invading countries, all that kind of stuff, were all just to push back against the emergence of that multipolar world. But I don't think I ever thought that BRICS was just going to be a clean sweep. Like, America was going to go, okay, you got me, guys. I've had my time. See you later. Bye bye. America was always going to. In fact, that was the point. That was the material with which the raw material with which I was kind of writing those articles and fleshing out that analysis was the fact that America was pushing back against it. You know what I mean? So the outcome of the attempts to, or the developing multipolar world, the outcome of that was then and is still today kind of unknown. But certainly what was not in any doubt was that America was going to push back
and
strongly against it. And how they were going to push back against it?
October 7th.
That was part of it.
Part of it.
That was Israel's play. But all the other things that have happened since. That was only 2015. That was only 1 year after the coup in Ukraine, you know.
Yeah.
So a lot of things have happened since then, but it all has followed that general course, you know, of great power politics pushing back against each other in different ways, in various different ways, to maintain to grab their share of the global pie, basically. And America being the chief villain because it's in the position, has been in the position for 80 or 100 years of having the lion's share of the global pie. So from a moral point of view, although morality doesn't come into it, but if it were to come into it, you would have to say that America doesn't have the moral high ground and is more likely to act in more extreme ways in a certain sense because, you know, the top dog on the global stage, let's say, would obviously feel much more threatened and have more of a siege mentality. I would feel under siege from the development of a kind of a new order where there's other competing powers that are there, because by definition they're going to take some of your share of the pie. So you're going to feel under attack while those other powers don't feel like they don't feel under attack necessarily, and they don't feel like they're attacking anybody. They're just the vehicles through which a natural order is manifesting itself. Of course, they're playing their part to allow that to manifest itself, and they're also personally interested in it because it's their benefit. But they don't see anything unnatural or forced or aggressive about any of it, and that's why you see Russia and China, to a large extent, sitting back and just, you know, relatively sitting back and allowing things to manifest. Obviously, they're playing a lot of different roles, but they're not standing up and trading punches with America. They're doing what they need to do and within the scope of what they can do. But they see it. I think they still see it as a natural process that is in their favor. And America sees it as a natural process which is not in its favor, which means that America is more likely to act in aggressive ways, which it has done.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it only pushes back the inevitable.
Yeah, of course.
And I do have one question about Medhurst's article, because at least when I went over it, you know, pretty quickly, because there's so much in there. Like one of the things, at least it was the impression I got, was that the way that things have played out, it almost takes it as a given that was the intention.
Yeah.
Where you have the goal, at least from the way he's describing Qatar taking a hit and having to declare a force majeure and its LNG getting shut down and all of that, it comes across as that was the goal, except that it seems like through all of the other things that came before it, that there actually was the goal of regime changing Iran.
It's like it's multi-layered. So there's always, there usually is when you look back in hindsight, there's a fallback safety position. You aim high here, and if mm-hmm. that doesn't work, that's cool because this baseline still feeds into what we'd like to do mm-hmm. down the road anyway. Mm-hmm. So 2022, right. They got a few ministers in different countries to actually articulate it. The goal is to assassinate Putin and cripple the Russian economy. And Biden said, tank the ruble. Didn't even come close to any of them. But you have Russia in a much harder containment situation. If the recent stats are correct, in the last 6 months from August to April, there's been a huge uptick in strikes. You put them all together because you don't really know which is which. Strikes, accidents, sabotage, and natural disasters hitting key Russian export sites, extraction sites, and refineries. You've seen them in recent weeks. Boom, 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 massive black clouds. Mm-hmm. Oh, the Ukrainians did it. Okay, maybe the Ukrainians. But it happens to dovetail neatly with an ongoing cascade, term he uses, of other things that are beneficiary, that of which the US always ends up being the beneficiary. So we went into this going, oh my God, what's Trump doing? He's going to spike oil prices. And yeah, he didn't. He's trying manically to keep them down because that's bad for the global economy. That's bad for the US. But in practice, it means Asia and Europe are just like, well, I guess we just have to pay that now. And they go to the US, which is churning out at full capacity as much as it can.
Mm-hmm.
And it's happy to do that.
Yep.
I guess where I'm going with the question is where would it, what would have been their ideal? Like, okay, if you regime change Iran, that gives you leverage over the country that makes them more compliant, and then you can, you know, it's basically, you know, overthrow Putin to control Russia. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Iran. But how do you get, if one of the things that they wanted to do was to control or reduce Qatar's LNG outflow to stifle the competition in order to increase your market share just by virtue of the fact that the competition goes away.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get there if you succeed? If they had succeeded in the regime change in January?
Because you know,
that's
you know from 25 years of Pentagon war games what the Iranians would do.
But not only that, but
they'll blow the shit out of everything around them.
But the Iranians didn't do that. That was the Israelis. That attack on the Qatari LNG, the Iranians said they didn't do it.
Yeah, no, no.
Israel did that.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was just decided after the fact. Like, you know, as you start off with maximalist goals for your war, and then you see how it goes, and you're a bit confused. Okay, it didn't go. It's not going as you expected, or whatever. So you adjust your plans and in line with what you want to achieve. You know, on the fly type thing. You know, because it's been going on two months now. You know, so as things progress, you're assessing how things are going. How close are we to? Are we going to reach our goals here, our original goals? No. What's our plan B? You know, what will we do now? Okay, well, let's take out. You know, Qatar can go away basically because that's in the interests of American LNG output.
Mm-hmm. But okay,
just a few missiles, you know.
Well, yeah, I guess. I mean, maybe I'm looking at it in the wrong
way. It's kind of strange. I'll just hold that thought for a second. But it's kind of strange that of all the countries that, of all the sites targeted by Iran in the Middle East, the Gulf states, including, you know, some Saudi oil refineries,
Aramco
in Dubai, in the UAE, Kuwait, etc. Is it actually Kuwait that? Are we mixing this up? Is it Kuwait that declared force majeure? Or
I think
Qatar?
I think a couple of them did.
No, there were two different things. Kuwait, I think it's Kuwait that...
Kuwait has for the first
Kuwait
time...
declared force majeure on its oil shipments.
Yeah.
I.e. They're not sending any more out.
Yeah. As of last week, zero exports for the first time since 1991.
Qatar declares force majeure on some LNG contracts. So that's what. So yeah.
Well, I guess yeah. So my point was that maybe I was looking at it in the wrong way, and you can still go along the lines of what Metters was talking about, where, you know, it's still the petrodollar, where, you know, the goal was to control Iran's oil. That's the maximalist goal.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
And then because of how it actually played out, they're like, well, we can still win by taking...
By blockading,
and then we get, you know, this smaller share of the pie, but it's still more than... had we not done anything at all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would say to you that in terms of smart people and totem poles, there were plenty within the U.S., not maybe the White House administration, but the U.S. deep state who know the parameters of what will go down roughly beforehand. Mm-hmm. They've done war game exercises going back decades with Iran. So, yeah, they'll know the maximalist goals aren't realizable. But that should there be accidents?
Mm-hmm.
Ordinarily, because we all thought everyone on Earth held their breath and went, "Yeah, you're going to crash the whole world economy."
But yeah.
Apparently, in the Pentagon, they were like, "It's cool."
No, but it's calculated. They're not. That's what I'm saying. There's not. It's calculated because if you can't crash the whole world economy, if you crash the whole world economy, America doesn't have any. Doesn't it? What? China's gone. Yeah. No more Chinese economy. No European economy. What's America going to live on? Who's it going to ship products to?
Yeah.
Who's going to buy its rare earths from? America collapses as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's mutually assured destruction by another means.
It's not. So these people are like, you know, Trump is plotting, you know, the destruction of the global economy and the starvation of billions of people and all that kind of stuff. It's like, he's not. But
the level of.
Just to back that up, what we're saying here, hold that thought. This is from last week or something. US LNG surge offsets Qatar shortfall amid geopolitical tensions. So USG basically replaced, is attempting or wants to replace or is replacing the shortfall from Qatari LNG. But then a few days after that, you have this one from Oil Price. US LNG faces limits replacing lost Qatari supply. US LNG has temporarily filled the gap offsetting lost Qatari supply, but running at full capacity is not sustainable due to maintenance and hurricane risks. So, that's an example of other factors being involved here that I think will actually be the real kind of fly in the ointment or the wild card in a sense, that there will be other factors intervening that could make this whole situation a lot worse and could upset their grand plan.
Yes, American.
It's very, like I said, so it's a very dangerous game that they're playing, but they figure that, you know, the alternative is not acceptable. To sit back and not do anything is very dangerous for us as well. So they're trying to do it and trying to do it in a way that increases their influence, increases their control and leverage over their peer competitors and on as many countries as possible.
But you make the already like somewhat crippled or like delicately balanced system even more precariously balanced.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the things that you do to do that, to try and make reality fit what you want it to be, despite what actual reality is.
Yeah, it's very delicate because, I mean, where do you draw the line, you know? Are you know, this is hitting certain economies fairly hard as the blockade and all that kind of stuff continues. So, Mr. President, you know, China's economy is in trouble. Well, is that a good thing or a bad thing? What point is it a bad thing? And how long can we keep going so that's just a good thing for us?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's pretty dicey, you know. And, of course, the attack on this blockade in the Middle East is absolutely directed at Asia, you know, because most of it comes out of the Strait of Hormuz in terms of tankers and all that kind of stuff it goes to Asia. Like Europe now and for the past several years gets a lot of its, most of its gas, instead of Russia, it's getting most of its gas from the US now. And a lot of its oil comes from Norway. Europe's oil comes from Norway and West African countries, which is interesting as well because there's an example of our evidence of kind of pushback by Russia. And again, this goes back a few years with Russia recently, right now in Mali, trying to prevent the French in particular, but there's Americans there as well, from retaking Mali. Because obviously once you establish a foothold in Africa, it's a new scramble for Africa, right? Once you establish a foothold in one country in Africa, then your influence can expand to other countries, you know, especially militarily. And that's what Russia's doing with the Africa Corps, in Mali right now. They're helping the Malian government which is not exactly US aligned, to prevent Western jihadis, Al Qaeda types, from overthrowing the government.
That was breaking news last Sunday, but the scale of it only became clear Monday, Tuesday. 10,000 to 12,000. Isn't it amazing how all the shit that's going on, they can still whip up Jihadi Inc.
Yeah, yeah.
The logistics involved.
Well, they exist, you know what I mean? They have existed. It's just about organizing them and arming them and funding them, throwing money at them, you know?
It was a coup attempt. They killed the defense minister, who was apparently one of the brains behind their development plans.
And of course, Mali and Western Africa, obviously not Mali itself for oil and gas, whatever, but other countries. Nigeria is the real player in terms of oil from Africa.
Niger and uranium.
No,
you're right. Nigeria is oil. Nigeria is,
yeah.
Niger is uranium.
Uranium and other rare earths, unexplored, you know, other minerals, gold, silver, etc. You know, it's a resource, an untapped resource. A lot of Africa is an untapped resource, has been for a long time. It's almost like time has stopped since the last scramble for Africa, the first scramble for Africa a few hundred years ago, a couple hundred years ago.
And now we're back to naval
and it's the
naval
same.
Blockades and the re-scramble for Africa.
Nothing changes, you know.
With Russian airstrikes against Al Qaeda Mali, with the French waiting outside. Yeah. It's crazy. It's all happening at the same time.
The only difference is AI. Now we have AI
right.
And drones.
And Trump, the discombobulator.
Yeah.
But if you take the time, you can actually make sense of some of his wilder stuff. Hmm. Like that thing, like he was talking about. Oh, yeah, don't worry. But you remember this tweet? Don't worry about shipping insurance, because Lloyds of London were like, screw that. We're not insuring anyone when the fighting broke out. Hmm. It was like day 3 or 4. And that's when everyone went, because that effectively started the closure of the Strait of Hormuz. And Trump just goes, it's fine. We're working out a scheme. You can get your insurance through the FDIC, the Foreign Direct Investment Corp of the United States. Mm-hmm. Well, that's baked into, that obviously hasn't come to pass yet, but that is baked into a long-term, it's an item list in this maritime action plan mm-hmm. of the Pentagon, where it's part of recentering global energy needs, global energy management, the spigot in the Western Hemisphere would be ensuring global shipping from here. Mm-hmm. It also ties in with his tweet, I think from last week. Hey, by the way, if anyone, you know, needs an escort for their tanker from here to there mm-hmm. for a fee, you can have the US Navy do it mm-hmm. as part of the whole thing as well. If your ship isn't one we own outright down the road, or one that you built here in a US port, or it isn't insured by us, then we can be your protection racket. Mm-hmm. They got the whole package for their vision. But this is where it might fall flat. So one tranche, one thread running through Medhurst's article is a series of recent news developments involving America's largest oil major, Chevron. Mm-hmm. So Chevron clinched the deal in December last year with Israel over the Litani gas field, developing it there and piping it. It's two-pronged, piping it to Egypt and also shipping it on to Greece. Mm-hmm. And no doubt using former Russian pipelines to get it into Central Europe. That was quickly followed by sewing up a deal with the new guy in Damascus, mm-hmm. Chevron. And the third party, of course, was Greece. And so it looks like on paper, they think they're such geniuses. They've created a South Stream of Middle Eastern gas going into Europe. We know they wanted to do a version of this since forever. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, it would have been Iranian gas or Qatari. But the problem, the sticking point was always Syria was not on side. No one would agree to let it be piped up to Israel because of the Israel-Palestine issue. But they're thinking, that's now wrapped up, or soon to be, because of the Gaza Peace Board, and well, the new Gaza, there is no more Gaza. That issue solved.
You have to deal with Iran, though. If you're going to have a physical pipeline, you have to deal with Iran.
Yeah,
or you have to get, and it doesn't mean obliterate them, turn them back to the Stone Ages, blah blah, destroy their civilization. Those are all Trump threats. what he's really, what he would really like, what he realizes the only real option for him right now is to find some way to bring the Iranians to help them to see reality, to help them to understand MAGA, and see the writing on the wall, that this is the new American century under Trump, and that they have an opportunity to fall in line and pick a side, and don't be stuck in your ideological, you know, don't hold on to this ideological fixation of just being independent and, you know, aligning with Russia and China, whatever. Like, you can't, it's not a, you know, Trump's perspective is it's not a good option. You know, you should align with us, basically. So just, you know, because this could all end in a moment if the Iranians would just get with the program. Like, dude, what are you holding out for, you know? Any day now, these Iranians are, if you find the really good ones, they're just going to come to their senses. And
we're not even sure who's in charge, but when he comes...
He'll make a really good deal, and it'll be awesome. So, there's an Alaska LNG pipeline that's suddenly come online. Japan, it goes back a couple of years, actually. A year, maybe.
I said Litani gas field, the Leviathan gas field.
Leviathan, yeah.
It's off all three. It's off southern Lebanon, Gaza, and Israel.
Yeah, which is why. So this is all.
Which is why Israel.
All these things have nothing to do with
religion and.
And terrorism and all that kind of stuff. It always is and always has been about just power and control and influence. That's ultimately what these people are motivated by. And they use all sorts of narratives like freedom and democracy and the Holocaust and blah, 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 to justify what they want. Weapons of mass destruction, blah, blah. And, you know, to a certain extent, like in 2003, the claim of, you know, Iran is a deadly threat to us because, you know, of their military power or whatever, to whatever extent, weapons of mass destruction or not, whatever. When they said that, it's not true right now, but it could be true in the future. Or it is true. The potential for them, for Iran or Iraq or Iran or any other Middle Eastern nation that wasn't aligned with the US hadn't been captured. The potential for them to get support from Russia, China, whoever, and to build up a significant enough military that they could threaten America's presence in the Middle East and threaten Israel. Two of those things go together. Means that they are an existential threat to us. So how would we convey that to people, the average person, without having to go into all the details and explain it in those terms?
Our gas versus their gas.
Just tell them WMDs. Because it's more or less like a WMD. Trump. It's like an economic WMD. You know what I mean? So Iran has the potential to have an economic WMD in the form of militarization of the country and it being non-aligned. So it's technically true.
Because when I talk about numbers, people's eyes glaze over.
Yeah.
But when I talk about a giant bomb blowing up...
A scary bomb.
A big scary bomb in a Hello Kitty backpack.
They understand.
They understand.
That's when they understand. And they're fundamentally understanding the same thing. They're understanding reality. We're just having to sell it to them in like childish SpongeBob type way, you know?
Yeah.
But that's all good because they get the message. But... And the bottom line is, like, sure, there might be someone who might be able to understand the nuances, and if you explain it all to them with all those nuances, they might come to their own conclusion and they may not agree with us. But the vast majority of them, they're not going to do that. They don't have the time or interest to do that. So we need to just tell them, convey the message in a way that they can understand. And it is a true message from our perspective. America is threatened by Middle Eastern countries, has been for 25 years, 47 years, threatened by Middle Eastern countries who are not aligned and who... If we look on our Palantir crystal ball, the original Palantir from Lord of the Rings, we can see in the future that this is going to be a problem. So we need to take action on it now, you know. The other thing that happened just last week after we finished the show was that there was another assassination attempt on Trump. And we didn't talk about that.
I think we did.
I thought we did.
I think it was Saturday night, the White House.
Was it Saturday? Party.
Yeah,
it was Saturday night. Yeah, we did talk about it, but we didn't have all the details.
No, it was
there aren't many details.
It was a very quick, like, 5-minute discussion.
It seemed farcical anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the guy apparently just ran in, didn't shoot anybody. I don't think he actually fired any weapons.
He didn't even have a weapon.
He did. He ran in with a shotgun and a couple of knives or something. And he just kind of dive through the metal detector while the rest of them were all scratching themselves.
Charge!
And then one guy fired off, I think, the five shots at him. Yeah. Didn't hit him.
But hit a colleague.
Hey, it's all in the line of duty, you know. And the guy was tackled. The guy, I think, fell. The guy ran through the metal detector and then just stumbled and fell, and then they all jumped on top of him, and that was the end of it. And that was an assassination attempt on Trump. But I thought it was interesting that, you know, we talked about Oz Perlman, yeah?
Yes, the mentalist.
Yeah.
Entertaining.
He was entertaining. It's kind of wild because right at the moment where the shooting happens, like he's leaning over.
Yeah.
At Carolyn Leavitt. I think he was meant to be predicting
her baby's
name or something like that. So like, here's the big reveal. How could I have known this? But I thought it was kind of wild that the very moment as he was doing that, there were gunshots were fired, you know, and that's when it distracted their attention to the back of the room. They could hear them from outside, you know.
And Caroline, on the red carpet on the way in, talking to the press, I said, y'all should listen to the president's speech tonight.
There's
going to be shots fired.
Yeah, that was weird.
That's one of those things. But
one of those things, yeah. But I thought it was weird that Oz Perlman, at the very moment that when gunshots were fired at the dinner with Trump there, and his really born mentalist, Oz Perlman, was performing a magic trick for Trump and Melania.
And
someone speaking.
And it's the kind of magic trick where someone tries to get into your head
confuses
and extract
you.
The information.
But that's playing into the old Israel's behind it all, which you're not allowed to do anymore because there's these mutual interests. That's
but reality has a way of graphically demonstrating it all the
same. Yes, because the reality is that, like I said, that's why Quatu, evil Quatu, is a good analogy. You know? Israel is the evil Quatu that is a symbiotic parasite on the American body, you know? And the guy who is the host for Quatu is, he's happy enough with it. It's part of him.
He is me and I am him.
You know, it's mutually beneficial,
me,
you know?
Me, myself, and Quatu.
Except there is a dominant. There's a top and a bottom here, right? and Israel is the top. Basically, because Israel has a long history of, as we've explained before, and it's all very understandable if you consider the Holocaust and all that kind of stuff, Israel has a long historical policy, particularly for America, but other countries around the world, of getting inside political institutions within host countries, and in that way controlling those host countries. And front and center on that would be blackmail. So I think there is a strong argument to be made that Israel is the dominant player in this dynamic, but that doesn't mean that America is being held hostage in a certain sense. Because again, who's America? Is America Trump, or is America the permanent kind of bureaucratic state? It's always been the permanent bureaucratic state long before Trump. Just because Trump comes along and says, I'm the president, I'm the decider, doesn't mean that that's what America is. I mean, people are just delusional in a certain sense, you know. That's not the way America runs. It's not the way any major nation state works. The overt people in front of you that are put out as politicians and ministers have for a very long time just been tools. They're there to play a role. And the permanent bureaucracy behind them is the one that runs the country. Yes, it'd be nice if that wasn't the case, but that is the way it has always been. Don't pretend that this is some kind of a recent thing where the deep state has come in and taken over our institutions. No, Trump came in and tried to take over the institutions that had been long established, many, many years, many decades. Mm-hmm. So he's the usurper from the standard MO of how governments are and have been run. And then, yeah, you can say it would be better if the actual people that we vote for are the actual deciders and stuff, but that's not the way it is.
You saw that in the firing of the Navy Secretary last week.
Yeah.
John Phelan's the Trump appointee. And as they say in this article, the AP's own write-up, that he clashed, this Phelan guy clashed especially with the powerful Deputy Secretary of Defense, Steve Feinberg.
Mm.
Look him up. Super interesting, weird guy.
Don't need to.
Pass. Oh my God.
So he's, you had me.
It's not Pete Hegseth.
You had me at Feinberg.
Everyone knows Pete Hegseth. Oh, he's the evil guy in charge of the Pentagon. No, look up.
No, he's not.
Look up Steve Feinberg.
Hegseth was a Fox News host.
Yeah.
1 year ago, or a little longer. So let's not give him too much credit.
I like the name Kegseth.
Keg's Breath.
Keg's Breath. Mm. That's the one. It's a good one.
Pete Keg's Breath. That sums him up.
Yeah. El País had a special this week. Gulf states send an SOS to Trump as economic shock deepens. Another development was that the UAE formally left OPEC.
Yeah.
Again, if you were looking at this.
Trump's happy with that.
And they don't mind because the world has changed. It's like matter.
Well, again, it's opening
not
it
the
up.
It's a different system now because those guys, what are they doing? I'm so naive because in the first 2 weeks, I was thinking, wow, the math figures. I was like, all those Gulf states, especially if Saudi Arabia goes first, they're all going to think America sucks as a protector. Let's all look east. Bullshit. They all put their money in Hong Kong, which is Western system, and New York. They opened a new LNG terminal in Texas with Qatari money. They're fleeing to the US.
Yep.
It's the opposite of what you imagine a rational step, but they're forced at every turn. They don't really have a choice. Their currencies for 40, 50 years have been literally pegged to the dollar. Yeah. I didn't know that.
They're artificial countries.
Yeah, they're not.
This is the whole idea.
I was going to say first that they're getting bailouts.
Yeah.
Functionally, they're calling it, Bessent call it as currency swaps because they're so short of dollars. They're getting bailouts.
But their client states aren't always helping. They're created. There's a picture in that article I talked about in 2015. You got it there, Scotty? That article.
Oh, with FDR meeting the king of Saudi.
Just up a little bit. Yeah. Black and white. No, not next one. That's Kissinger meeting in 1973.
Yes.
But this one.
That was the upgraded system.
This is Roosevelt seals the deal with Saudi King Abdul Aziz aboard a U.S. warship in the Red Sea on 20th February 1945. One day after the Yalta Conference in Crimea established the basis for the future U.S.-based world governing institutions.
Yeah.
So right there, that was the inception of Gulf states right there. The rest of them just were carbon copies of Saudi.
Yeah.
But the whole multipolar world business, Trump is happy with UAE. Trump would be very happy if OPEC disappeared in the same way. You know, he's happy when all these institutions, the UN, NATO, OPEC, et cetera, are all disbanded. Because for him, that's, what are we talking about here? Multipolar world. Okay, it means that it's a free-for-all. There's no more large blocks that control everybody else. You know, the world isn't separated out like after the Cold War between East and West and all this kind of stuff. It's all opened up, and everybody's independent. Every single country is open for business on their own terms, not in the terms of. That's why he'd like to see the European Union destroyed as well. He wants every single European. That's why he's supporting Orban and all that kind of stuff. Get out of the EU, break down the EU. He wants every country in the world to be open for American business, or open for haggling, open for to be made offers. Because if they're ring fenced by these historical institutions, then you can't get in. There's all this bureaucracy, and they're all locked in together, and it's not good collective bargaining power.
Yeah,
exactly. It's not good for America. So he wants it all broken down and it all opened up, and each country to be able to negotiate with America or whoever they want, technically, on their own terms. But Trump is in the process right now with this Iran business and everything that's come before, and everything that comes afterwards. He's in the process of trying to, he's actually attempting to bring on a multipolar world, but a world not a multipolar world, not in the image or the image devised by
China and Russia
and China, but rather in Trump's image or in the vision he has for it, which is understandable. He's going to try and leverage.
The Americans would want to say on how this order takes shape.
Yeah, they want to say on how it happens. Yeah, and all you have to do is hope that in the remaking of this world order,
really break something.
Something doesn't break, which is possible. It's possible that things could go tits up or pear shaped, whatever you want to call it. But again, the doomsayers and all that kind of stuff, I think they, getting back to what we said at the beginning, that the world and the countries and the people in it are much more resilient than a lot of those doomsayers would Imagine. I'm not saying things won't get scary and hairy and freaky and all that kind of stuff. And but people tend to, social media types, geopolitical analysts tend to
underestimate what?
Underestimate the resilience of the whole system and underestimate the resilience of human beings. So, but again, it's understandable as well because nobody's been here before. You know,
no,
this is all new. We don't know how it's going to do.
Next spring season.
So you tend to go to the worst case scenario. Mm. You tend to do your...
I'm doing the math here. Not looking good.
You tend to game it out and think, that's, all these bad things could happen, therefore they're all going to happen.
Yeah.
Which is not really the case. 50% of them will happen.
And hopefully that's okay.
And hopefully they're not the bad ones. It's totally unknown in terms of how it's going to manifest. And like I said, the only thing that I think is yet to come into play in a significant way is not just the machinations of, it's not only about the machinations of these great powers, but rather Mother Nature as well, you know.
Right in the middle of this, pure coincidence.
Growing seasons, all that kind of stuff. Flooding.
The country with the number three largest exports of LNG was Australia. Mm-hmm. Didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Australia. Its entire seaboard was hit by a cyclone and their systems are offline for 6 weeks.
Yeah. It's a very dangerous thing to do in the current climate, basically. We have climate change. The climate going haywire rather than climate change. Climate being a bit weird. You know, it seems to be
not as reliable as it used to be.
Well, it seems to me over the past few years you have that monsoon belt around more or less the equatorial regions that causes monsoons in the different countries around the world. That seems to, you're getting those kind of effects further north. And countries further north, including into Europe, southern Europe, or even northern Europe, those countries aren't equipped for that.
Yeah.
And there's the way they've long since established kind of growing patterns and you know, where they're set up to actually produce food based on the weather systems. If the weather system starts changing, that'll be way worse than the kind of shortage of, I mean, fertilizer and all that kind of stuff would be bad, but it doesn't matter how much fertilizer you have if your fields are flooded. You know?
Yeah. So looking into the crystal ball.
You have droughts at the same time.
The EU geniuses are saying, well, that's why we need the Mercosur deal to bring in farming products from South America.
Yeah.
Well, what if a crisis hits there too?
Yeah.
What's your backup plan?
It's all hard to know. Just have to wait and watch. But that's a general overview in which all of the events are to come will be playing out, and it's important to have that kind of overview of what's going on, at least at the political level, what the intentions are, why certain countries are doing certain things and what their motivation is. Of course, you could say that you can go above that and say there's some kind of grand plan that's working through all these people to bring things to a certain, like, and that's where people go depopulation, all that kind of stuff. Maybe. But like I said, depopulation might be well-intentioned. It's kind of like
it might be well intentioned from Mother Nature's perspective.
Yeah, well, Mother Nature has the final say, you know. But they're all just doing what's in their own interests, you know. And then it's the old, again, from the era of the great game, the first great game between the, you know, the empires, British Empire, Russian Empire, and stuff. The strong do what they will, and the weak suffer what they must. And that's been that's the way it's been for most of human history, I think. And that's just the way it is. So it's not personal. It's not personal. It's just the way it is.
And suck it up, Cupcake.
Walk it off, Cupcake. Or figure out what's going on and prepare yourself, you know, adjust your position to the best of your ability and keep an eye on things, because that's really all you can do. Like, you should be keeping an eye on things as they're happening right now, because it can protect you in different ways, you know. Certainly if you have no idea what's going on, you're exposed, your bum's hanging out the window. So
yeah,
you don't want your ass hanging out the window.
And next thing you're running through
for lots of reasons.
Next thing you're running through a metal detector thinking you're saving the country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Anyway, we'll leave it there for this week, folks. We hope you enjoyed the show. We'll be back next week with another one on whatever nonsense has been going on between now and then. So until then, have a good week. See ya.
Bye, all.
See you guys.
Can't stop the signal now.